Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sestrino here with Josh Wiggler for this week's edition of Wiggle Room. Josh, how are you?
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Very tired.
Yes.
Very tired. It's been a long year since the last episode of Survivor Island of the Idols.
Yeah. All right. Well, Josh and I are here. We're going to do the Wiggle Room a little bit differently this week. As I've mentioned on a couple of podcasts, yeah, no wand off whatsoever this week.
Yeah. I don't know that the song parody thing is really appropriate for a week like this. Sorry to Wombat Nation.
Yeah,
for those who are craving it, I don't particularly find much about this funny.
Okay, all right. Goes without saying. And so we will also be having this week in Survivor History as its own piece this week, where I'm going to talk with Nick Iadanza and then get into the This Week in Survivor History quiz with Jordan Kalish as we look back to happier weeks in the history of Survivor.
Are you saying I'm finally free of Twitch? Because that is like the first good news of the week.
Yeah,
the shade.
Okay.
Sorry, Jordan.
We are going to have a conversation about everything and get Josh's take on the matter. But we also have a guest with us, which is very rare in the Wiggle Room, Josh.
Well, I don't know if that's totally true. I mean, Wanda Shirk is here every week.
That's true.
The Force Ghost of Casey Kasem is here most weeks as well. But it is rare that like another human being, another actual human voice is on the line with us. So it's very exciting to me as well.
Yeah, and we're very lucky to have with us a contributing editor over at Refinery29, that she has covered the Me Too movement and is also a very big fan of the ideal versions of the CBS reality franchises. Please welcome Lily Herman. Lily, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Oh, tired as well.
Yes. Tired, fatigued. Yeah, it's been a week for sure. Lily, I'm so glad that you agreed to do this. Lily and I were we were talking a little bit late last week just about everything that was going on. Lily's someone I've admired online for a really, really long time, and I've known that you've been a Survivor fan for a while as well. Your Survivor tweets these days fewer and further between, I think, over the last little while. But I saw you tweeting about everything that was going on this week, and really struck me that I think you would be a really valuable voice in this conversation.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I used to live tweet Survivor obsessively, and I think especially around 2016 and all that was going on there, I had a little more political tweeting given my my line of work, and then a little less Survivor tweeting. But you know, skipped a couple of seasons, but watched them all kind of on the off season. So I got myself caught up, and I've been watching live every week this season.
And you've been, of course, following all of the fallout from this past week's episode of Survivor as well. And we'll cover all that. Anything in particular you want to just talk about to give us the backstory of how you got into Survivor, how long you've been watching?
So I am a late bloomer in terms of Survivor. I think like everyone else, I always knew Survivor was on. I have a very distinct memory when I was in elementary school of a babysitter watching Survivor Africa. And I kind of watched 5 minutes of it when my parents came home and like immediately turned off the TV. Not because they're like not chill parents, but because they were kind of like, do we really want our like 8-year-old exposed to like half naked people on screen without context? You know, it was kind of the thought. But I started watching, which probably ruined me for life. I started watching during Kagyan. So this was like, what, 5.5 years ago?
Yeah.
And obviously, if that's your first season, every other season seems ridiculously not as great.
Right.
You know? And yeah. I think the week I started watching was the Merge episode, which is also considered one of the best Merge episodes. So again, kind of a weird start, became immediately obsessed. Binge watched everything under the sun that was Survivor related over the like next 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then just sort of picked up from there. I get very obsessive about TV shows. So, went down the Reddit rabbit hole, all of it.
So your Survivor watching career really started with one of the best Merge episodes of all time. And we've now arrived here at the
full
worst
circle.
Merge episode.
And, yeah, I think doubtlessly the worst Merge episode of all time. Is there a competitor?
No, I don't think so.
Is there anything that's even remotely in the vicinity of competitive for that title? I do not believe so.
I've been thinking the same thing actually all week about this friend who got me to Survivor during the Merge week of Kageyan. And now, yeah, here we are talking about, you know, we've had some dull merges. We've had some really great merges, but this one is just hands down the worst, period, you know, capital T, capital W.
So Lily, could you talk a little bit about what this moment has meant outside of the people of we're very much in our own bubble here in the Survivor community in terms of like, how could this happen on Survivor and what does this mean for the show and for the contestants? But for people who aren't necessarily in that bubble, can you just give some context to what's happening with the show right now?
Well, I think it's always interesting with reality TV shows like Survivor when they get covered by everyone. So I had, for instance, with this episode, you know, hot take upon hot take upon hot take to read, which again is never really the case, even for some of the show's more controversial episodes. I'd say we haven't really had something like this since, you know, Zeke back in Game Changers. So that's been sort of interesting. I think too, you know, based on some of the people who are involved, you're seeing communities care more that typically I wouldn't say wouldn't, but they're not really known for their Survivor connections. So for instance, you know, I come from a family of swimmers. My mom and my, you know, my brother's a college swimmer. My mom and her family swam, and she's always kind of rolled her eyes and chuckled at my Survivor viewing habit. But I get a text from her this week that's saying, you know, Elizabeth Beisel is playing Survivor. And what did she do? Like, she's, you know, you're going Swim, which is a more niche, you know, swim publication. And they're all talking about it. The comment section is going wild. So I think it's striking more of a nerve in ways that necessarily wouldn't otherwise. And I think too, there's been almost like the initial reaction to the episode and then like the reaction to the reaction, I think has also been interesting as people trying to contextualize everyone caring so much is I think weirdly, I wouldn't say heartwarming, but kind of a positive, but definitely different than a lot of kind of Survivor specific controversies.
Yeah, I think like almost the reaction to the reaction to the reaction. I think one of the things that's been staggering to me is how many conversations have come out of this. You know, Lily, we spent some time on the phone the other week. I think one of the few positives that's come from this for me has been getting the chance to just really sit down and talk to people for long stretches of time about what happened here and where things went so wrong, why things went so wrong, areas that I hadn't considered about how this this was such a failure on so many different fronts. And I think, Rob, we're, you know, when we do the Wiggle Room, this is typically the podcast that starts to look forward to the next week of Survivor based on where we are in your schedule, in your lineup. And here we are at the start of a new Survivor week, coming not long after you just posted, in fact, yet another piece of podcasting this week, this Beyond Survivor episode that was really, really amazing, throwing to all sorts of different resources for people and speaking with experts. And there's just been a litany of really amazing voices on the matter this week that I think as like you're kind of like struggling for some silver linings here, it is like a nice reminder of just how many thoughtful people there are in the discourse who are weighing in on this. And conversely, of course, there's some rougher takes out there as well. But I felt like that was a piece of it. And Rob, you especially, I felt like the podcasts you've delivered over this past week have just been really, really wonderful to hear the perspectives of so many different people.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Josh. And really, Lily, what I've noticed about this, which I think has been a little bit different from the Zeke and Varner incident, where that I think that as viewers, I think that so many people watch that and say, wow, this was really terrible. that, you know, this could happen to somebody on Survivor, but I don't know how many people that watched that had a personal experience that was similar to most people, you know, have not been outed in that type of way. Of course, you know, it has happened to many people, but probably, you know, a relatively small number, you know, compared to the total viewership of the show. Whereas this, I think that there were so many viewers who watched this and saw what was happening to Kelly, but then also, like, and you know what? This also is reminding me of a situation that I've had in my life. And so it was, you know, doubly traumatic for people to be watching.
Oh, totally. I think too, you know, I think at the time of the Zeke kind of Varner incident, you had a lot of the takes and a lot of the commentary was around, oh, how, you know, how obviously unfortunate and terrible this incident was, but a lot of Americans maybe wouldn't have gotten to see the trans experience, you know, at the time. That was maybe their first time ever really seeing all these different sides of it. You had a lot of different people in that tribe who were, they all universally condemned that moment. And I think what you had with this sort of latest episode is like piles and piles and piles of layers of things where you had every single kind of issue on every single level that could have gone wrong or could have had a difference of opinion. You know, you have Janet, who's now, you know, the hero queen and angel savior of Survivor Reddit, who everyone's cheering for. You have, you know, Aaron making his classic, you know, I know women, therefore I know what's up with this. You have obviously Dan and his whole thing. You have Elizabeth and Missy. So I think it's, and then obviously you, on top of that, I think what's also interesting is you have a lot more people questioning production. Like I kind of vaguely remember, you know, when obviously, and again, I don't want to, very different situations, but I think one of the only times where production really had to be involved offline was during the Zeke and Varner incident. A lot of people were praising, you know, production for how they handled it. And obviously there was this huge game plan for when, you know, the episode aired that Survivor and CBS had partnered with, you know, LGBTQ organizations and all this stuff. Whereas this episode, you had a lot more people kind of questioning every part of how production handled it.
Yeah.
The fact that they seemed so underprepared for this in every way, shape, and form. You know, I think there's just sort of this, yeah, you just had, there was an issue at every single level of this, which I think is, I wouldn't say necessarily rare for television, but to have so many like screw ups so much, like all around to everyone, was just kind of really terrible, but also just kind of fascinating in a weird way. Like, I honestly, when I, Josh and I talked earlier, you know, I was still unpacking it, you know, 2 days after the fact, just trying to, you know, pull all the threads in here and was not getting to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I mean, so I cover Watchmen, the new HBO show, and it's based on a comic book. And I'm gonna spoil the comic book here for people, because this is how I've been kind of framing it, or one of the ways I've been framing it in like all of like the frenetic, furious conversations that I've been having with people about this episode. At the end of the comic book, a gigantic telepathic squid is dropped into the middle of New York City and millions of people drop dead. And millions more are psychically traumatized. And then there's because they're in like the psychic blast wave radius. And then there's all of the people outside of that who are now processing the fact that, oh God, I guess there's extra dimensional alien squids in our universe. And we now have to start accounting for that. And in the middle of all of this, the United States and the USSR, takes place in the 1980s, are about to nuclearly annihilate each other, and now they have to dismantle that threat in the face of this larger intergalactic threat. On top of all of that, all of it's a hoax. All of it's a hoax that is elaborately designed by the alleged smartest man on the planet. So there is so much to unpack there in terms of like how this world has radically changed. There's so much to unpack there in terms of who's at fault. How did these people die? How did this go so horribly, horribly wrong? And in my trying to like process how much of an extraordinary letdown this situation is. It's just the autopsy on it is going to take a long time. I think that there's so many different reasons that this feels like a failure, a huge production failure, a huge failure on Survivor's part. Even in terms of the fact that, and it's been said a few times now on the podcast over the past few days. I'm really glad to have heard the take already. I was really ready to talk about it. Like, how is there no call to resources at the end of this episode? How is there no title card that is pointing viewers in the direction of resources for people who have suffered from, you know, sexual violence or assault or abuse? How is there nothing for mental health? Rob, you've talked a lot on the podcast this week about how triggering this was for people in the RHAP community, but even beyond that, just looking at people on in the Survivor fandom online, everywhere you go, like, people are very upset about this. And there was no advance warning for any of it. There was no advance warning for any of it. And I'm reminded of Survivor Ko Rong, which I believe production did not love that season. I think that Survivor Ko Rong is a season of the show that the fandom may have a different view of it than the people who made it, because it was a very difficult season to make. It was the last time they shot outside of Second Chance, which they shot out of order. It was the last time they shot in Cambodia, and they were very, very difficult physical, harsh circumstances. Several members of production were medically evacuated out of there because the conditions were so harsh. And obviously, three contestants were medically evacuated for various reasons. And in the hype up for this season that I think, you know, Probst and company did not particularly love, one of the narratives they spun, I remember a New York Times article about this, but it was very open knowledge that this is the hardest season of all time. You're going to see just how physically difficult Survivor is. We're going to show you how prepared we are to deal with medical crises. You know, it was a really self-congratulatory hype machine in that regard, with the way that they were able to rise to the occasion of what happened to Caleb, that they pulled Neil out of the game, and what happened with Joe. Where was any of this for this season of Survivor, where it's, you know, where the episodes leading up to this are dealing with very heavy conversations, everything that goes on between Jamal and Jack, the tribal council, the week before the merge. And these are episodes that Survivor seems to be very proud in the way that this discourse is handled. And then we arrive at this episode with no warning at all, other than the barest minimum title card at the start of the episode. Where was there any sort of preparation for this in the marketing for it? And the reason I think it doesn't exist is because Survivor knows they screwed this up so horribly. Like, this isn't something that they could prepare people for, because they themselves were unprepared. It's like you were enrolled in a class all semester long and you didn't show up, but you got to the final and you just had to take the test and you're surprised you failed. You didn't study. You didn't show up the whole way through. I'm really offended on that level.
I think also what was sort of interesting to me, especially over the last couple of days, as these apologies have come out from various people, you know, we keep seeing people say, oh, I didn't have all the information. And that's like a separate debate over, you know, obviously some people would say, well, you should always believe people who say that they are dealing with, you know, uncomfortable touching or sexual harassment, whatever's going on. You should believe those people who are saying that. But I think the thing at the end of the day is, guess who had all of the information? Production did. And they chose not to necessarily do the most that they could have with it. And I think that, you know, kind of gets to the heart of the issue that's always been there with Survivor or any of these sort of, you know, interactive reality game shows, which is, yeah, how much of it can you say is a game, or can you use the quote unquote game as an excuse for not stepping in or not intervening? And at what point do we actually say, you know, you all really should have had a plan for this? Like, how did no one think, you know, what happens? I mean, we've had other situations where I just, you know, walked away thinking, you know, how did no one think that this was going to be an issue? Like, you know, I mean, even people have brought up, you know, Sue Hawk and Richard Hatch from all the way back in All Stars. I know there was the Gandia and Ted incident. The one that actually, in more recent memory, which isn't obviously unwanted touching or something like that, but I just remember thinking, like, this is a very harmful series of episodes, was the Shireen and Will stuff that went on during Worlds Apart. And also, you know, there were people like Dan who were on that season. You know, I remember thinking at the time, this is just an issue of
a different Dan.
Yes, a different Dan. Dans are not looking good right now in Survivor, but you know, it's. But I remember at the time thinking, like, this is just really toxic from like a harm to women perspective. You know, we're watching this go, and there was no real serious acknowledgement of it, other than that really bizarre, you know, 2-minute reunion segment. Like, it wasn't really dealt with that there was like verbal harassment that was, you know, and then also obviously there's tons of other stuff in that of the portrayal of, you know, Will obviously was one of the few contestants of color on that season along with Shireen. You know, there's all these other things that go into that that were never really unpacked by the show. It was just kind of seen as, you know, I think Probst at the time gave his very standard, you know, Survivor's a raw experience and it you know, shows the spectrum of things we see in the real world. So there wasn't really an actual reckoning with what it actually meant to watch a woman be so, you know, verbally harassed and bullied on screen for so many episodes. I, you know, things like that, I just come into play as we're watching production sort of fumble every single part of this entire experience.
Lily, what would the have appropriate response look like to you? In an ideal world, what would you say? And if it helps at all, if you want to use some, you know, a fictitious scenario where we have this type of an incident on a future season, maybe what would the idealized version of it look like?
Well, I think first and foremost, I mean, I'm sure, Rob, you can speak to this more than I can. I'm sure that contestants are aware of what happens, for instance, if you get into a physical altercation with someone. I'm sure that's covered that, you know, physical violence, there's sort of a line drawn there, will not be tolerated. Ideally, there would be similar lines for things like, you know, unwanted touching or sexual harassment or assault, you know, things like that. And a much tighter, you know, a much tighter run operation in terms of what that does and doesn't look like, being very stark with that. I think, you know, I think what's sort of still confusing to me is there seemed to be this system of warnings, but there wasn't at the same time. I think, quite frankly, if we're looking at this season, Dan should have, in my opinion, been pulled. Like, there was this ongoing issue that was not solved. It was making people uncomfortable. If the argument is like, oh, you know, there's some purists who are very much like, we don't want to affect the game. Well, you know, someone kind of inappropriately or, you know, giving unwanted touching to lots of people affects the game. And I think, yeah, to your points earlier, you know, both of you, I mean, where were the resources that were there for survivors? I think there needed to be a little bit more from, you know, Jeff Probst or other members of production about what was going on. I think definitely a much sturdier warning going into both the season and this episode would have been great. But I think by and large, I mean, everything comes back to if, you know, if Dan had been taken out of the game a lot sooner and a lot earlier when it was clear that these issues were not going to be resolved after that single warning, you know, none of the other kind of ripple effects that we saw, be it, you know, Missy and Elizabeth or, you know, obviously what the treatment of Janet, everything else that we saw would not have happened. So I think that's what it comes down to is, you know, creating a safe environment for all players and particularly those who feel like they are, you know, being marginalized. I think that that was sort of, that was the key thing for me that was missing is I just don't get why, you know, Dan's behavior was able to go on and on and on for as long as it did. Cause it's obvious that this was, as everyone said in the episode, you know, an ongoing issue. And we saw the tape. So, you know, that was, I think above all the thing that really bothered me.
Yeah. And I think what bothers me about that, and, you know, I interviewed Probst, it was an interview over email, and asked him about, you know, what's the protocol for a castaway lodging a complaint the way that Kelly did against Dan? What's the protocol for how members of production follow up on such a request? And Probst mentions our players are monitored 24 hours a day for 39 days. There is never a moment when there is not a producer or camera crew with them. So you didn't catch this quicker? Like, how did you not catch that quicker? How is that on the board and action isn't taken sooner? If you truly have 24/7 coverage, Where's the response?
I could speak to that as a former contestant. I think that's more of like, I think that's probably closer to a figure of speech than the actual truth. I mean, unless that, and we don't really see like, you know, lipstick cameras like that are just like stuck in the shelter, like, you know, like the Big Brother house type setup. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of time when you're on Survivor that you are not covered. I mean, you might not be.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. I go out on location and I get to visit the tribe camps. And I have seen moments where there are large groups of contestants who are just hanging out with maybe somebody who has like a shoulder camera that they're just not filming at that moment in time. And everybody's just hanging out. Everybody's just there. So 24/7 camera coverage.
Yeah,
that's not a thing. Because that's not a thing.
You know, I think a lot of survivors would be a lot less comfortable using the bathroom if that was the case.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing too is that sort of, with Probes kind of putting out this figure of speech about, you know, 24/7, 39 days is, at the end of the day, it comes down to, okay, well, if the issue isn't necessarily coverage or people watching, it then becomes an issue of the people who are watching either not taking this seriously, not understanding the signs, not being trained to deal with something like this. I mean, it's kind of like, in his own words, there becomes something a lot more sinister of okay, so now you're saying that, you know, for the most part, he's saying production's aware of what's happening. Great. Why wasn't more done here? Why did it, you know, it not occur to anyone to, or enough, or someone high enough, you know, whatever it was, why was more not done, as I think what it comes down to. And, you know, and it's sort of, like I said, I think it's sort of interesting that this whole, you know, I went through a ton of, honestly, I went down a rabbit hole of like Jeff Probst, you know, kind of explaining the situation in these sort of big moments, whether it was the Jack and Jamal moment, you know, the Zeke and Varner moment, just going through how Probst reacted. And he kind of has this very similar spiel about, the experience being this raw, you know, sort of, it's both a television show, but it's also this raw expression of, you know, the human emotions and a social experiment at the end of the day. You know, we get that sort of spiel every time. And I think it's interesting to watch that not be enough for people at this point and production being questioned in terms of that just not being quite the response people want at this point, you know, 39 seasons into the show.
Yeah. Lily, you had when we talked, you had brought up like kind of like the cultural response to this versus and we typically don't talk Big Brother here in the Wiggle Room, but you had
Ooh,
mentioned
finally.
Big Brother. You had mentioned Big Brother to me as kind of an example of there had been a season earlier that kind of stood in like sharp contrast to the mm-hmm. situation that we're seeing now.
Well, first, I do want to give a shout out. Laura Bradley, who's a writer at Vanity Fair, actually pointed out another example of a Big Brother issue. So I do want to give her a shout out for like expanding my knowledge, because admittedly, I did not watch a lot of Big Brother 20. But there was the issue there of, for instance, JC on that season was accused of sexual misconduct. He was given what was apparently a bunch of different warnings and was not obviously taken off the show. So that's already kind of hanging out mm-hmm. there, I think. More recently, if we're talking about this kind of quote unquote season or this year of CBS reality TV, you know, this isn't obviously the first time in the past, what, like 6 months that CBS has really stepped in it. We're coming off of a season where, you know, the winner of Big Brother, you know, people online, you know, fans were spelling his name with three K's in it. You had people calling and also calling him out for like misogynistic behavior was sort of the euphemism that was used. You know, you had a lot of people questioning how production dealt with, you know, the fact that four of the five people of color that were on that season were the first four contestants that were evicted. So you're kind of dealing with these larger issues of, you know, how production is handling these things. And obviously it's not just CBS that's getting a lot of flack. You obviously have shows like The Bachelor that's been kind of, ongoingly universally criticized, and they had their own like sexual misconduct incident mm-hmm. a couple seasons back on Bachelor in Paradise. So you kind of have this larger problem going on within these reality shows. I think CBS is a particularly egregious example, given that, you know, Les Moonves, the former head of CBS, was embroiled in his own Me Too scandal. So, you know, it's just sort of interesting watching, you know, production after production here.
Yeah.
Keep having these ongoing humongous responses from fans. I mean, you know, in the Big Brother context, I don't think we've seen such a huge negative reaction from fans in quite some time over comments that were made. You had a lot more awareness from the audience of what was going on, especially live feeders. So that's been sort of interesting to watch. You know, I personally had to kind of stop watching a lot of the season because it was that painful, especially after hearing what was going on live feeds and not being put on the actual show. And so I think it's almost, there's like a little bit of, you know, trauma there of coming off of that show and going straight into this Survivor season where there have been already some other issues. But then this episode sort of encapsulates like, oh my God, there's just, they do not know how to handle any of this sort of stuff in this day and age. Is sort of the vibe I'm getting.
I think that one of the things that might help with this whole situation moving forward on Survivor and any of these shows is that I do think that the onus needs to be off of the contestants for saying like, okay, I do want this person removed versus I don't want this person removed. Just to jump on a tweet that Josh's great friend, Nick Majorano.
Yeah, I can't even diss him at this point because I thought what he said was so good.
But so I really do suspect that Kelly was asked, like, do you want to get him to be removed? Do you want him out of the game? And I believe that she, and again, this is just me speculating, but based on what we saw in that conversation, I believe she did not want him pulled from the game. And as she talked about, you know, there's always repercussions. Like if, you know, Dan is removed from the game and everybody's like, hey, why is Dan removed from the game? Oh, Kelly said, oh, she just did it because, you know, I think that there would have been a backlash against her from the other players in the game. And that's not something that she wanted for her game, even if in her heart of hearts, she would have liked to have seen him removed. Nick Majorano, a friend of the podcast, said that on Twitter, a third party with authority is crucial for a player's entire well-being. Despite medevaced players telling producers they're fine, the doctor has authority on physical health. The psychologist should have authority on mental health if the cause would be removed. And I'm not sure if it's necessarily a psychologist that we're talking about, but should there be somebody who is more of a third party in terms of like not even somebody who's on the production of the TV show, but somebody who's there to monitor these types of situations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I mean when I say that I think that they hyped up the Ko Rong situation because they felt really confident in their ability to disentangle a situation when it comes to like physically, you know, medical evacuations for like physical harm for things like that. This is an area that they are just woefully unprepared for. And I do think a third party absolutely has to be involved moving forward. And it's a shame that it wasn't already in place.
Well, it sounds like at the end of the day, they just needed someone, who was not, you know, hasn't been producing the show for 2 decades or whatever to kind of be the gut check here who says, you know, hold up. Yeah. Like, you know, for instance, if it were up to just a regular person to say, okay, yeah, any of these people who are medevaced are fine. We have a different story. You know, luckily we have a doctor who comes in and has the authority to pull anyone, regardless of what any producer or cast member is saying. I think the idea that you wouldn't have sort of this third party come in and kind of gut check in these very, you know, precarious situations that are, more about, psychological harm or mental harm to kind of come in and say, no, like this is not, you know, this is, and, you know, especially a situation like this, it's not just about the game and also like the psychological effects. You know, if someone's medevac, they themselves are the only ones really dealing with the actual physical issues to a certain extent. I think mentally there can be a lot more that goes around for all these different people and for having, no one there to kind of be the one to step in and say like something's very off and we need to figure out how to fix it immediately is part of this production issue.
Yeah, and just like Nick had said with the medical, there are often players who say, "No, I'm fine. Don't pull me. I'm good. This is getting better. I can play with this." And the doctors have the final call. It's not Jeff. It's not the players. The doctor says, "Okay, no, that we've decided that you can't go on any further, and there's nothing that either side can do."
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and I just think that, you know, you just have a completely different situation if someone was there to, and to also just put it in perspective of like, someone saying, I don't give a crap about how good of TV it is. You know, I care that some, you know, woman or multiple women are not going to be psychologically damaged for a while. And that America is quite frankly going to, you know, a lot of people across the country watching were triggered by what was going on. You know, I just think that an entire piece was woefully missing.
CBS owes a lot of people for their therapy bills this week is is all I will say. Yeah. I know where to send my invoice personally.
Yeah, no, I can't even, I mean, the number of conversations I've had, and I'm sure you all have had about this is just, yeah, I would like, I'm technically a freelancer, so I would like to bill hourly to CBS for yeah. the amount of turmoil this week has caused.
Yeah.
Having to explain it to everyone from, you know, my survivor friends to my mother who just wants to know why Elizabeth Beisel is now despised.
Lily, is there any place that you would like to see the show move forward to after this? Is there anything that you feel like that they can do to correct this in some way after this?
Honestly, I don't even, you know, I was trying to think about this in terms of both this particular season and then the show as a whole. I mean, obviously there's a lot of reactionary stuff they're going to do to be sort of proactive for the following seasons, I would hope, at least. I think this season is just going to be, I don't know. I think it's just going to be sort of a weird one. It just seems like they were ill-prepared for the reaction to this episode. I don't really, you know, I'm kind of interested in kind of a bad way to see where this coming episode goes. I don't really know how they're going to address both the game and this larger fan reaction. I'm already kind of cringing at whatever they're going to try and do with the reunion to try and make up for this, because I just don't know how that's going to go well, or obviously it's not never going to be given enough time. So I think there's plenty they could probably do. Well, actually not even in terms of next season, cause it was already filmed, but you know, I think it's sort of, I don't know. Yeah. I have a lot of hope for what they could do in terms of other seasons, but I think, you know, we've seen how they've kind of handled previous seasons with these sorts of issues, and it kind of looks like we're in for sort of a really bizarre, kind of almost cringeworthy ride that ends in kind of a bizarre reunion, you know, kind of conversation or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, that's, I wish I had a better answer, because I've been really wrapping my mind around it, and it's just kind of looks like a mess for the rest of this season, at least.
I think that's the answer, right? Like, yeah. That's where I find myself with it, is like, how do you possibly, to quote Jeff Probst himself, you can't unring that bell, you know? Mm-hmm. Rob, you can ring the bell if you would like.
Not for this.
But, you know, you can't. It happened. And it's interesting to me how, you know, oftentimes, like, a player will come off the show and be like, oh, I got such a rough edit. Like, that wasn't accurate to my situation, and there's just, you know, it didn't adequately portray the game that I played, and just we'll nitpick it beyond belief. And Survivor itself had a rough edit this past week, and I think it's because the actions on the island were uneditable, you know. Like, I think, like, there was no way to really sweep under the rug the mismanagement of the situation. There's just, like, there's no coat of paint that you can apply to the situation that makes it look good for them. And I guess I am heartened by the fact that there is a, if not a universal reaction that kind of feels that way, then at least a pretty big reaction that feels that way, that there was this sense among Survivor viewers of, if you don't want to call it a betrayal, then at least, like, recognizing that this was wrong. This was all wrong for a lot of levels. You know, individuals who were involved in it, obviously Dan, 100%, but also just the mismanagement piece of it. You can't make a good story out of something that was just done so poorly. And, you know, Survivor, the core premise of it is, you know, it's this intensely complicated game in these deprived conditions. And it makes the game so hard, and it makes the game so compelling. And it's dangerous, and it's physically dangerous, but that danger can only go a certain extent with you still feeling good about the whole thing. And I think the moment that it crosses into this territory of being so psychologically damaging on a way that goes on a level that is so far and above the game and the show. It's just really, it's demoralizing. It's just, it's really demoralizing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like the thing about this entire, that episode, the entire situation is, regardless of, I think, kind of where you stand on a variety of like social issues, there is something you can feel icky about, regardless of who you are, which is very rare for a reality show or for like any of these situations to where you could find fault or be angry at like any number of parties in this, and you actually probably wouldn't be incorrect, you know? So that's, I think, kind of the weird part of why there's sort of this staying power around the episode that has lasted more than, you know, a day or two. And why people are, you know, vowing not to watch the rest of the season, or they're turned off from Survivor for a while, or whatever. It's just, there are just so many layers to just feeling gross or upset about something that's involved in here.
Lily, I had seen that you had tweeted the other day about an article about mentioning the apologies from the castmates. And you did wonder aloud, where has the Dan apology been?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I since tweeting that, I've gotten a number of fan theories ranging from what seems plausible to more conspiracy theory-esque on what's going on. But I think my overarching point is, first of all, I think we can all multitask. You can be upset with Dan at the same time, be upset with Elizabeth, Missy, be disappointed in, you know, Lauren and Aaron. Again, there's like I think this idea that we can only be upset with one person at most is kind of, you know, it's ridiculous. You can be upset with whoever you want to be upset with, but I think,
especially on Twitter,
you know, especially on Twitter.
In a very different issue, like, please do not cyberbully people on Twitter.
Oh, right. Absolutely. I think there's a difference between having a conversation where you or something where you say, I'm disappointed in this person, or here's the issues with it, versus, never send anyone threats on, you know, that's no, don't do that. But I think part of the weirdness too of Dan being silent for any number of reasons and having all these people who were sort of, involved in various ways have to apologize means that all the focus, a lot of the focus has been on them, as opposed to the person who, again, is at the center of this perpetrating these actions. I think at the end of the day too, I don't know Lauren, I don't know Missy, I don't want to psychoanalyze them, but at the end of the day, they were people who did deal with some of this sort of, even if it wasn't, you know, uncomfortable touching. So at the end of the day, these people who were sort of, viewed as almost victims in this are the ones who are also dealing with the most backlash, which, again, not to say that you shouldn't be called out for things like, you know, trying to falsify or exaggerate claims for a game. But I think that, you know, now, especially in the days following, there's been just a ton of backlash against those people I wouldn't say not as much or not as big of a reaction, but I think a lot of the focus on Dan has sort of had to shift because all the new information coming out is about these people apologizing versus Dan or production coming out with more of an actual statement that doesn't sound like something like a robotic lawyer wrote for
their
CBS.
Statement was exactly what was the title. It was the title card, basically. Yeah. It was the same thing. Like, there's no new content there. And not for nothing, Probst hasn't said a word since any of this outside of the interview with me, outside of the interview with Dalton. He's in a bunker. He's on lockdown. Jeff, where are you? Where are you?
Yeah, I think it's just leaving, you know, these women and Aaron to kind of fend for themselves has, in a way, has just been sort of, and it's also then you have the apologies that come out, then you have the reactions from the rest of the cast. So that's like a separate thing that's been ongoing where you even have some people commenting, you know, 4 or 5 days after the fact. So there's almost like the stream of information where people, have opinions on the apologies, have opinions on the cast reaction to the apologies, you know, and we never, and then suddenly we're not talking about Dan, his actions, what it means to, you know, what is inappropriate or uncomfortable or unwanted touching, what does that mean? You know, it's just sort of, it's frustrating, but also kind of, disheartening in its own way. To watch the sort of initial focus go from him to all the other things that are going on with this situation.
Well, thank you for joining Josh and I to talk about this. And, we really appreciate getting your take on this really weird week on Survivor.
Thank you for having me. I wish it was under, better circumstances, but a lot to unpack here.
Lily, where can people find more of your work?
Ooh, well, if you want to see all of my various hot takes, the best place is probably Twitter, where I'm at LK Herman, so LKHERMAN. And then any other information, I guess, about me as a person is at lilyherman.com, so LILYHERMAN.com.
Okay. Lily, thank you again for making some time to talk to us this week.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Lily, it was great having you on here. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. So thanks again to Lily Herman for coming on and talking through all this stuff with us. Josh and I have a bit more to say, so we will get into that. But first, Josh, let me just thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Noom. And Noom is the all-encompassing weight loss app, because getting in shape is not just about losing weight. It's about learning healthier habits and feeling better about yourself, whether that's more stamina to keep up with
this.
Your life.
Yeah.
And it's finally getting into those gold genes, being more in tune with your body's needs and practicing self-care. The Noom app is really great because that not only does it have things like where you can enter in what you're eating, but it also can connect to your step tracker. And you also will have access to a personal one-on-one counselor that can chat and talk with you about how you're doing in terms of specifically about how you're doing with your health.
But not like how my day is going.
I don't know. That if you want to, I guess you can engage in that type of chat. That I
how was your interview with M. Night Shyamalan earlier today? I won't get any questions like that.
Yeah. So just in terms of opening up my app that I was checking it out because I was going to do the ad read, and I was getting, I saw that I had a lot of unreturned messages from my trainer. And you'll never guess what her name is, Josh.
What's her name?
Emily. She's checking in. She wants to know why I haven't written back. But basically, what Noom is going to do is give you physical examples of a better self-care, how to feel more confident, also psychological examples like the ability to make healthier choices, and social examples, because you don't want to just stay in all the time. Well, sometimes I do feel like that, but that's no way to live your life. That's right. You got to get out there, and Noom is going to help you. How? Noom is a habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses, and it's based in psychology. Noom is going to teach you why you do the things you do and arms you with the tools to break the bad habits and replace them with a better one. They say it's based on a cognitive behavioral approach.
Ooh, I love CBT. Big CBT guy.
Yeah, it's not a diet. It's a healthy and easy to stick to way of life. Chat with your goal specialist and Noom community to get and give help to people going through the same things. You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up today for a trial at Noom.com/Rob. That's Noom.com/Rob. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/Rob to start your trial today. That's at Noom.com/Rob. The last weight loss program you'll need. Okay.
All right. Well, this is the part where normally, like, I'm on high alert for the wand off
to catch
me off guard. But I think we could disarm everybody here that's not happening.
Disarm.
Yeah, disarm.
Okay, Josh. So we have an episode of Survivor coming up this week where I believe that we're losing two more
people.
That's
what it looks like.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, there has not been a lot of people thinking about this Wednesday night.
What if, like, every episode from now on, they're like, two people more. Let's just get through this as quickly as humanly possible.
Well, the wild thing is, I mean, we're down to now... what, 11 people are still in the game? I mean, I feel like I have not talked about the show in this type of context since last week, but there are 11 people that are left in the game. And the finale is actually, you know, 1 month from today as we're recording this. So
we have another month of this?
Yeah.
We have another month?
It's
We have to do this for another month?
Yeah, there's four more episodes until the finale. I mean, it was just the merge.
That's tough.
Yeah,
that's tough.
Yeah,
that's tough. That's hard.
So, you know, that's what it's looking like right now.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that last merge of the decade, Rob, that we were we were so hopeful about last week, really mm-hmm. took a turn. Really took a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be hard to watch this season.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Well, my prediction, Josh, is that I just think that Dan, unless he has to be on the screen, I feel like that unless it's his boot episode, I feel like that they are going to show us as little as possible of Dan.
Yeah, but there's no winning there. Like, do they just like drop the whole thing and pretend like it never happened? It was nice to see like Kelly and Jamal in like great spirits in their Ponderosa video and like, you know, Jack singing, hell of a voice on Jack. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But like there was just like such a tonal whiplash to be going through like the psychic trauma of this 2-hour episode, which by the way, what was it called? It's called It's Time for the Merge, I think is the name mm-hmm. of the episode. And it really sticks out to me in the weekly interviews that Dalton does with Jeff. He always ends it with like, can you tee us up for what's coming up in the next episode? And in the interview he did with him in the week leading into this past week's episode, mm-hmm. Jeff said something to the effect of like, well, it's another merge and merges are always game changing and this one's no different.
I believe he called it 2 hours of riveting Survivor, if I recall, which I think that if you compare it to the week before where Jeff, you know, I think was much more excited about the tease for, you know, a very socially conscious tribal council that was coming from the week prior episode.
Yeah. It's just like it's that like description of like this one is no different. This one's no different.
Mm-hmm.
This one's no different. The episode is called It's Time for the Merge. It's just I feel like we were just so inadequately prepared for what we got into. And I'm just so angry about it.
Yeah.
I'm really angry about it. As somebody who's been in like the trenches of the Survivor world for a few years now, it just feels like a major violation, and it just reeks of unpreparedness. It's hard for me to articulate quite how like personally disappointing this is. I've given a lot of my life to Survivor. Like I've given a lot of myself to this show. This show has been a part of my life in an enormous way since I was a kid, since that final episode of Borneo. You know, I've missed, I think I've said 4 seasons live since then. You know, two cycles, the Vanuatu and Palau cycle, and I believe it was the China and Micronesia cycle that I wasn't watching live. But other than that, this show has been like a very important part of my waking life for so long. And long before I was a Survivor journalist, I was a pop culture reporter. I was a comic book journalist. And then I moved over to MTV where I was covering film and TV and had like this thought in my mind of maybe I could cover Survivor. Like I had wanted to be on the show a long while before that and it didn't work out. And I'd applied the one time and that was that. And I had it in my mind, like maybe I can cover it. Maybe I can get close to it. Maybe I could be a Dalton Ross or a Gordon Holmes one of these days. And I am very fortunate that that has been able to happen for me. I've gotten to see and meet, I've gotten to see some incredible sights, meet some incredible people. I've gotten the chance to see this game firsthand. I've gotten the chance to call you, Rob, like one of like my greatest friends on the planet. I'm just like enormously grateful for the fact that you and I have been able to meet through this. It's just enriched my life in so many ways. And then something like this happens and it's hard to imagine how you put the toothpaste back in the tube. And the truth is I've been feeling, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that I've been feeling pretty bummed out and burned out by Survivor for a little while now. Anyone who listened to me on EOE, I think, picked up on that, and call it the Game of Thrones burnout, whatever. I was very annoyed with that whole season and thought it was, you know, a very dumb premise, of just a very poorly thought out premise. And I could get over that. You know, I could take the summer off. I knew that there's a great cast coming around the corner. And like a little bit of a hokey premise, but a cast that I really felt could rise above the premise. And now we're here, and like, this isn't something I can get over the way that I can get over like a shitty production idea for a season. Like, I can live with that. You know, I've been with the show for as long as I have been as a fan, as somebody who's been covering it, that I can abide, a misfire of a theme. This is very, very hard for me to abide. I can't abide it. I just think it's such a critical failure on a lot of levels, and I'm really unimpressed with the response to it so far. And I don't know. I don't know. I know the purpose of like this podcast in particular is like to laugh about it every week. You know, we sing songs and we laugh about it every week. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how we come back this week and we've got an episode that's going to make me laugh in any way. I don't know how I'm going to be able to find any of this funny. I don't find any of this funny. I'm so deeply disturbed by what happened. I'm really upset about it. I'm really upset about it.
I know. And you and I have spoken, not on podcast. So I know how upset, you are about the whole thing. And, I think that this is going to be, you know, we don't know what's going to come. We don't know, what's next or how this is going to, ultimately turn out. But, you know, we have every reason to be concerned.
Yeah, I could tell you a little bit about how it's going to turn out for me. So I'm not writing about Survivor anymore. This is a choice that I've made with full support and blessing from my editor at The Hollywood Reporter, but I'm just over it. I'm not writing about the show anymore. I'm not doing exit interviews. I'm not going to be doing an email interview with Jeff Probst that is hardly sufficient to cover the magnitude of what's just happened here. I'm just done. I'm just done. Survivor has been a thing that I've done for love of the game. And not to say that that can't return someday, but I'm really struggling with it. And I'm really struggling, quite frankly, with the role that I've had with it. And it's not one that I want to continue. And it's something that I'd been thinking about for a long time anyway. People know that I didn't make it out there for season 40. And I really tried to move heaven and earth to make it out there for season 40. The Game of Thrones finale was happening literally at the exact same time. And I was hired by my job to cover Game of Thrones and shows like that. And Survivor for them, when they hired me, was like a value add where they were like, oh, sweet, you cover Survivor. You really like covering Survivor. It seems like you've got people who enjoy your writing about Survivor. Yeah, that sounds great. Do whatever you want there. That's not the reason I was hired. So for the perspective of my employers, it was a no-brainer that I was going to be staying home for Game of Thrones and not going out to Survivor. And that did not stop me from coming up with every single like Charlie at the whiteboard convoluted mapping of every scenario that I could possibly pull off in order to be able to do both things at once. And it didn't work out. One of the things, if it had worked out, that I would have missed, my wife was graduating from graduate school at the same time. And I would have missed that. There was no contingency plan for that. That was something that I wasn't going to be able to go to. And that was a series of really difficult conversations between Emily and I. And we had gotten ourselves to a place where we felt like if I could find a way to make this work, we would make it work, but neither of us was happy about it. And it didn't work out. And thank God it didn't work out. I don't know if after a week like this, I don't know that my marriage would have survived it. I think it would have been very, very bad for me personally. And I think that I've just put too much of my own self-worth in this show in this way that I just don't feel comfortable with anymore. And I'm coming up on 2 years of sobriety is something that I have talked about elsewhere on podcasts, that I don't drink. A big part of the reason is because I had spent the last several years drinking to hide a lot of pain that I've been feeling, just a lot of existential pain that I've had for a very, very long time. And that got out of control. You hear me on an hour-long podcast about Survivor every week, and I'm usually all laughs, but you don't see me the rest of the day. It's not always easy putting one foot in front of the other for me. The act of existing is hard for me, and I've been putting in a lot of work into making sure that I can exist. The events of this episode have troubled me deeply. And I can't risk my sanity and my sobriety over this anymore. So I'm not writing about the show anymore. I think as far as the podcast, I'm not leaving the podcast family by any stretch of the imagination. We've got a lot that's going on in post-show recaps. We've got the Lost podcast every week. We've got Walking Dead every week. We've got Mr. Robot every week. And I would like to be here as well, as long as I can stomach it. But Rob, I just don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Well,
let's take it day by day. I haven't seen the episode yet, and I don't plan on watching it on Wednesday night. I'm going to give myself some time before I have to dive back into this. But I just don't know what kind of stomach I'm going to have for any of this moving forward.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel the same way. To be able to write off the show, and you know, we're at different spots in our careers respectively, but I just have to hope that there can be some good that comes out of this, and that, you know, Survivor is so important to me. And I had said this on a podcast with Nicole, but you know, every positive thing in my life is somehow, you know, out of some way was, you know, comes from my experience with Survivor. And this was really, really bad this week. And I just have to put faith in that the people that are making it screwed up this time, and that they can learn from this and do better in the future, because they have to.
Yeah, they really do. They really, really do. And I fully respect that from you. And, you know, for me, a lot of really great things have come out of Survivor, but a lot of bad things have too for me. A lot of bad things have as well. And I have to look out for myself to a degree. And that's where I'm at with it right now.
Okay. All right, Josh, is there anything else you want to say, or whether about Survivor or not?
You know, let's see what the week brings. And I don't know, TBD as to where we go from here.
Okay. Have you thought about watching any other shows? Will you give Big Brother a shot?
I don't think so. People keep hyping The Circle and Sequester, and I know Brent and Taryn are deep into that. I have no idea what those shows are about, but I'm like vaguely interested, I gotta say.
Okay.
Do you think I'd like them? Would I like them? One of them's like a phone survivor, right?
Yeah, one that Circle I have not gotten into yet. I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay, let's see. Let's give it a shot. All right. Well, Josh, we're gonna thank you first for sharing all that, because I know that that is not easy to do on a podcast. So really appreciate you, you know, as per usual, you know, opening up your soul to myself and the listeners.
This isn't easy stuff for me. This is really hard for me. But I have to be authentic to myself, and I have to look out for myself as a human being. And I will be here within reason. I am positive that this is not the last time that I will talk about Survivor. I just don't know when the next time will be.
Okay. All right. I know people have a lot of questions, and frankly, we will address them, you know, as we have the answers to, I'm sure, many questions that are coming up out of that. But we'll just got to take it day by day. Let's get through Wednesday.
Let's get through Wednesday.
Okay. All right. I will be back with Shannon Gates again on Wednesday night. And Shannon Gates deserves a proper episode of Survivor to recap.
Shannon Gates is the queen of Survivor as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. She was incredible on the Know-It-Alls. Oh, my God. She was so, so good. She was so good.
The world's greatest Survivor expert.
I mean, honestly, probably true.
Yeah.
I really do believe so.
She will be back joining me live on Wednesday night as we hopefully are able to see some Survivor get out of its own way and be able to put together a show on Wednesday night. We'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Oh, God. Pray to whatever deity of choice.
Yeah.
That comes through. That comes through together.
Yeah. Then also this week I'll be talking with T-Bird on our recap show. So excited to catch up with T-Bird. And then Jessica Lease will be on the feedback show with me coming up this week. So hopefully we are able to get back to business as usual to some degree. And we'll have to see how Wednesday night goes. All right, Josh, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us today.
All right, friends. I'll be around. Howard.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right. And thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.